Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is an Our Paranormal Afterlife remastered episode, and I'm your host Simon Baum. I've recently gone back and listened to some of the first episodes, and I was reminded just how much valuable, relevant insight they still offer. So I'm going to be re-releasing one episode each week, now with updated and remastered audio for a much better listening experience. In this episode, I'm talking to Andy Tomlinson about his book, Healing the Eternal Soul, Insights from Past Life and Spiritual Regression. Andy is a psychotherapist, Earth Certified Regression Therapist, Michael Newton Institute Certified Life Between Lies Therapist, and High Vibration Energy Therapist. Andy is the founder of the Past Life Regression Academy and has been the president of the Society for Medical Advance and Research with Regression Therapy. So, thank you for giving us your time and coming onto the podcast. You've got extensive experience doing past life regressions and life between lives and things like that. Could you tell us how you started out?
Yeah, well, thank you very much for inviting me, and very pleased to be here. Well, there's something called synchronicity, which is something that quite often people come across, that things are presented to you in a rather unexpected way. I originally did my training in hypnotherapy and psychotherapy, and I became a registered psychotherapist. And someone gave me this book by a lovely gentleman called Roger Walger, who at that time was one of the leading past life regression therapists, and who did most of his work in America. And like a lot of people, when you get books, you kind of put them on the shelf and mean to get around to reading them. And at some point, I just remember I felt prompted to pick up the book and read it. And this was all about Roger's groundbreaking work with past lives and how he was using body therapy to really resolve very deep trauma with clients. And I found it absolutely fascinating. And I thought to myself, wow, you know, this is, there was an English gentleman. He did most of his work in the States. How would I ever get in contact with him? And a week later, something was popped through my letterbox, and it was an invite to go to a 2-day workshop by Roger Walger in the UK, about half an hour from where I lived. Now, at the time, I thought, oh, that was rather strange. But again, this is a synchronicity. This is guidance coming from above to make sure that you make the right connections. And I went along to his workshop, and I realized then that even in my 4 years of training in hypnosis and psychotherapy, where I'd really covered most of the major therapies that were currently being used by therapists, that there was something missing. There was a spiritual dimension, and there was something about helping people clear the core issue, where a lot of the techniques I'd been taught were about suppressing symptoms by making life more comfortable. And all of a sudden, I discovered this was a technique that could produce the most amazing healings. So I signed up for his 2-year training course in regression therapy, and that's how I started on the path. It's kind of interesting because there was another piece of synchronicity, because I'd had 4 years training to be a hypnotherapist and psychotherapist using hypnosis. And when I worked with Roger, he used to use techniques called bridges, which used to take people to the source of the problem, but didn't use hypnosis. And he would say, no, no, don't use hypnosis. And I thought to myself, oh, why did I spend years of my life learning about hypnosis? And here I am using these amazing techniques of past lives and regression therapy and body therapy, and I don't need to use hypnosis. And then I heard about a gentleman called Michael Newton, who had discovered that if you take people into a past life and through the death, that soul memories between lives emerge. And people get an extremely deep spiritual experience that helps them understand their current life and able to motivate and engage themselves spiritually. And again, I was told about it. I was given a book. It got put on the shelf with the other books. And eventually it came out and I read it. I thought, wow, this is exactly what I want to do. And went online and discovered that Michael Newton, the author, was doing his very last workshop before he retired in Los Angeles. And I thought, wrote off to them and they said, there's one place left and it's yours. So then I had to convince my partner who I was with why I wanted to go to Los Angeles for a workshop I'd not talked about before. So I convinced her it was going to be part of a longer holiday to explore California. And then I went there and had the most amazing experience of how to use deep hypnosis to get people into these soul experiences. So all of a sudden, life had like little pieces of a jigsaw and then they come together when it's needed. And I think I'm no different than anyone else that whatever skills in life you build up, even if you think you're leaving them at some point, they'll be there for a reason. And at some point, if you just allow intuition to take hold and guide you, then you'll find as part of your soul journey, all those skills come together.
Taking people through regressions, do you always take the client through a past life death?
Particular therapy that I use called regression therapy is about resolving the source of a problem. So it's a little bit like someone getting, a physical metaphor could be someone gets a thorn stuck in their leg. And the two approaches are either to get some sticky tape and put it over the skin and let the skin heal, but the thorn's still in there and that periodically pain would come from the thorn that's there. Or you go in and you pull the thorn out, and obviously there'll be a certain amount of discomfort to pull the thorn out, but once it's out, complete healing can take place. And a lot of therapies tend to work at the surface level of healing the skin, where going to the source of a problem is really what regression therapy is. And the problem that a person has could be something that happened 2 or 3 weeks ago in their current life. It could be something that happened as a child. And a lot of trauma that people hold have happened from childhood events. Or it could be something that happened in the womb before birth, or it could go all the way back into past lives. And the art of being a regression therapist is to follow the energy to take you to the very source of the problem and to resolve it. And once it's resolved, problems completely disappear. Unexplainable pain goes away. Emotional issues completely go away. And people are able to live a much more meaningful life through it.
Use something called the energy scan technique. Could you tell us about that?
We're all energy. Einstein said it, and physics, I think, have generally accepted it. And although we think of ourselves as having a physical body, it's a little bit like ice, where ice can be energy in the form of a solid. Or if the vibrations increase, it can be a water vapor around it. And likewise, as humans, we have an energy, a physical body, and we have an energy body around us. And the memories of things that have happened in the past are carried in our energy field. And this is one way in which it's possible for a therapist to tune in to the source of a problem by going through the energy field. Now, there are other ways of doing it. That's just one particular approach that could be used. You know, so for example, if someone has irritable bowel syndrome, for example, and they come through the therapy and they're not actually feeling the symptoms at the time, then by making the intent to look for the source of the problem to do with that and scanning the energy field, it amplifies the physical symptoms. And then that's often a very useful way to go straight to the source of the problem. And the person's problem is the entry to resolve it. And the therapists who do regression therapy don't actually do any healing. They just manage the process. Healing comes from within. Now, we've heard about pharmaceutical companies talking about the placebo effect. You know, they talk about how annoying it is when they're doing clinical trials that sometimes people spontaneously heal themselves. Well, regression therapy could be thought of as the placebo effect. In other words, we're helping the person's own natural healing ability to do what it was meant to, which is to resolve a problem. But to resolve a problem, Buddha explained this whole process very well as long ago as 2,000 or 3,000 years. When he was here on the planet. But he talks about the four steps to spiritual enlightenment. And he said the first step is to know you've got a problem. You can't even begin to bring about any sort of change unless the person knows they've got a problem and they want to do something about it. And the second step is to know what's caused it. And because only by knowing what's caused it can you do something meaningful in your life to make sure it doesn't happen again. The third step is to release the energy and to get a different understanding about the problem so that if situations happen again, there's an opportunity to respond in a different way. And the fourth step is to actually make sure that you bring that into your life, you fully integrate it so that you transform yourself as a person. And through that process of self-healing and spiritual enlightenment, people grow as souls. And regression therapy fits in because it follows the whole of that process. It just simply accelerates the process so people are able to clear something that they may otherwise have spent several lifetimes trying to clear, but they can do it in just a few sessions with the skillful therapist.
Could you give us an example of somebody who's had really great therapeutic effects from this?
When I was a student, I remember a lady was coming to me. I always remember this because this was one of the first clients that I had after I'd finished my training, and I was still in the process of qualifying. And this lady was an accountant, and she said, at least once a month, sometimes twice a month, I just get really angry, so angry I can't even go into work. And she said, I want to do something about it. So I said, oh, okay. So she lay down and I talked to her about the last time she felt angry, and she could start to feel the symptoms coming up. And then I used the symptoms with something called a bridge, which is a way where you follow the symptoms and the problem at the source manifests itself. And you make the intent to go to the source, and the universe actually enables the appropriate memory to come through. And for her, it was a memory of a past life of being in medieval England. And she was a lady living in a forest by herself and looking after two children. Her husband had left to go to war and hadn't returned. So she was like a single parent looking after these two children. And alone in the forest, alone meaning she didn't live with the local village, but she traded with them, and in return for some food she used to give them herbs and things like that. And at some stage she was accused of being a witch, and some religious people men came, held at the two children, and she was taken away to the local village with her. And the way of treating witches in this particular part of England and at that time was to strap them to some wood, put them under the water, and when they came back, if they were still alive, it meant that the river had rejected them because they were evil and they were taken away and burnt. And if they came up and they were drowned, they'd made a terrible mistake. So she knew that her life was over. And one of the things that happens in past lives is when people know they're about to die, they're not actually frightened of death. But for her, the issue that she had was the injustice of the way she'd been treated and what was going to happen to her children. Because in those days, they didn't have orphanages or welfare state or things of that nature. The children would have just been left to roam around and eventually die of starvation. So this was her dying thoughts as she was being pushed under the water. Was what's going to look after my children? And the interesting thing is that whenever she used to get angry, the thought that used to always go through her mind was, who's going to look after my children? This is in her current life. And yet she didn't have any children in her current life. And this is what caused, whenever she'd been for other therapists, the therapist quite a lot of difficulty understanding it, because it's a thought that didn't have any rational sense. But in the past life, it made perfect sense that this was a thought that had been carried over from the past life. And there's a process not only of helping people to explore the past life, but to actually transform it. And this is equally as important because to be able to transform it, people need to get a spiritual insight about the event, why it happened, to be able to get into an intuitive dialogue with the souls of the children and spirit guides and other spiritual figures, until eventually it was all understood and forgiven. And part of that dialogue was with the spirits of the men that had done this work with her. People get very deep spiritual insight with a therapist that's been trained in the appropriate way. And so she found resolution, she found completion and forgiveness from this past life. And after the session, she was telling me that, and this is something she hadn't talked to me before I started the regression, that when she was younger, her mother had tried to put her head under some water to wash her hair. But she screamed so loudly, her mother had to give up. And she also told me that she had a lot of problems with men in authority in her business life. So I talked to her a month later to find out how the therapy progressed. And she reported that the thoughts of they taking my children had completely gone. The emotional disturbance that she was having had been resolved. And not only that, she said that she was parking a car and bumped into another car, and this businessman came out and started to shout at her. And she said, normally my knees would have just buckled, but I just stood up there and told him, you as much at fault as I am, and was just amazed how she was able to empower herself to do that. And this is one of the wonderful things with this sort of regression work, is that the healing goes beyond what people present as their challenge or their problem that they want to resolve, because various emotions or getting tangled scenario of either current or past life events.
Have you done some study of near-death experiences?
Yeah, this is an interesting area. I mean, I personally haven't worked with near-death experiences, although some of my students who I've had on my training workshops have had that and found that the experience of the past life death is very similar in some ways to the near-death experience. But I did have a client who came to me one day, and she worked in a hospice where she's caring for people that are dying. And she had this fear of death. And it was like a fear stroke fascination, that she was so drawn to people that were dying, but for herself, she was terrified at the thought of dying. So I took her into a past life, and the part of, that was the most helpful for her was actually allowing her to experience going through a past life death. And because what happens in a past life death is that the consciousness that leaves the physical body leaves the physical pain behind, and kind of like in a very detached way, it can look down and see the scene below them. They're very similar to the accounts that some of the people who have done near-death experiences have found. And when she came back to Wide Awake and I was talking to her about it, she said it completely transformed her life, that now she'd be able to experience what it's like to die. It's almost like it wasn't a big issue anymore. You know, she was, a fear of death had disappeared simply through that experience.
When you take people into the life between life space, do you find what they report as their experience to be consistent? And also, is it similar to Michael Newton's?
I wrote a book called Exploring the Eternal Soul, which I wanted to make it slightly different than Michael's work. I mean, Michael has written two wonderful books about the between life experience, and they spent most of his life researching for those books. But with the books, he took like little extracts from different people, so that although the extracts were quite interesting, there was nothing in there to show the whole story that people experience. And neither was there any reference to anyone else, because there's a lot of other pioneers who have found very, very similar results. So in Exploring the Eternal Soul, I try to make it different. And I took 15 clients that I'd had before, that I'd done between life sessions for, that had volunteered to be subjects for the book. And I knew that they'd had quite detailed experiences. And five of them had read quite extensively the material of people like Michael Newton and others. And five of them had read parts of it a little while ago, but had probably forgotten most of it. And five of them hadn't read any at all. So I did that as an experiment to see whether there'd be any difference between them. And I took the full story so that we could follow all of the events that they had all of the way through. And I also, through that book, was able to reference all of the other pioneers and the similarity between the major events. Now, you know, if people were, for example, comparing two past lives, I mean, the things that you can be guaranteed will happen is that there'll be birth and a death. There may be a marriage in the middle, but maybe or may not be. It depends on the life. So that there are events that you know are going to happen, but the actual detail of the content will be different for the different cells. So in the case of the between life sessions, some of the events where there's consistency is obviously the death experience itself. There's a period of time of reviewing the past life, trying to make sense of it at a soul level. This is often done with spirit guides or other spiritual helpers who aren't there to judge. If anybody's doing any judgment, it's the soul themselves. Quite often, spirit guides are giving very supportive messages And then there's meeting colleagues, and quite often souls have what are called soul groups. These are groups of souls that often plan many lives together in different roles, husband, wife, daughter, son, and it's part of the learning that a particular group wish to take. And then planning for the next life and the review with evolved spirits of light about it, and then the actual birthing process. So what I established is not only with Michael Newton and the research that I'd done, but also with all the other pioneers, a lot of those major events were being picked up by all of them. So in that sense, you know, we're talking about now 20,000 people worldwide of all the world's religions having that sort of consistency. Because I think Michael Newton worked with about 8,000 people for his books. So when you consider all of the other work that's been done. So in a way, that represents an amazing piece of research of consistency.
Was there a time where you took people into the Life Between Lives place and you communicated with the Council of Elders?
Well, some of these evolved spirits of light often have that as a name. They're often known by other names as well, such as the Wise Ones, the Council, the Higher Ones. And a lot of these evolved spirits of light are really not too bothered about names. It's more us in our human form that like to put names to things. And generally, they all have got to a point where they don't need to incarnate for their own soul growth, so that they have a lot of experience to share. And by working in groups, they're able to give deeper insights to help the soul. Now, an example could be almost like when people are at school, you know, they may start off with a teacher in one class, and then as they progress up, they'll work with another teacher and so on. And when they're at university, maybe they get several people all helping them through. And all the way through, these helpers have got more experience than the student themselves and able to offer help. They're not telling them what they have to do. They're just giving them helpful information. And this is very similar to the role that the, you know, the Council of Elders that you mentioned take. People get very, very deep spiritual insight. I mean, these spirits of light don't mince words. You know, they'll say it as it is. And people feel it at a very, very deep level of soul that, you know, if there's some aspect that they need to work with in the current life, you know, they'll be told about it. And they've got lovely ways of expressing it as well. And it's not necessarily all verbal. Sometimes they'll show themselves in human form. I mean, they are just energy, but they show themselves in the human form purely for the benefit of the client. So, for example, I had a client who was very, very serious. So the Council of Beings of Light, as well as rather, dress themselves up as like they're having a party, and laughing and joking. And this was their metaphor to the client, just to lighten up on life, that, you know, life doesn't have to be serious. Life can be a place of love and joy. You just have to find your own path to it.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you is, do you have insight into what does happen to a soul when it becomes very, very advanced? I've heard that they return to source.
We're all on a path where we originally come from source, and we carry that within us as we have experiences and learn and grow. And at some point, as our vibrations are raised through the experiences that we have, we become more and more like the very source that we started from, until there's a point where the difference between the individual cell and source is so little, it's almost like they've merged. I mean, there still will be an aspect of distinction, but it just becomes less and less noticeable. But of course, everything runs by free will. And if a cell wishes to remain more individual, it can do. If a soul wishes to have more incarnations, it can do. If a soul chooses not to have incarnations, it can do. It's just that there are consequences from the decision. You know, so for example, if a soul chooses to take a very difficult life, there's an opportunity of great spiritual growth. A soul may choose to have a relatively easy life of living a life where there aren't emotional lessons, and perhaps the physical world is very well looked after financially, or through a happy family life. That can be a really lovely, positive experience. But it's not necessarily something that will accelerate the soul development. It's just a choice souls have. So throughout everything, there's free will, both at a soul level and also in a human level. You know, we as souls may have chosen to be in certain bodies, in certain situations, faced with certain difficulties, and have certain people in our lives who are either supporting us or doing the opposite, or being tormentors or perpetrators to us. But how we respond to it is our free will. And if we work through the issues, we can leave the pain of emotional situations behind and move into a place of love and joy. Everything is possible. But it's soul's choice. Some people choose to come to therapy so they can clear emotional issues and move on in life in a meaningful way very quickly. Other souls choose not to, and they want to have their own experiences, their own way of clearing it. And that's perfectly okay. Again, there's no judgment, there's no right or wrong. There's just a different consequence. And when we do have free will, we need to be responsible for ourselves and the choices we make.
Say I pass over, my time comes and I move on to the other side. I, as Simon, will still be the Simon consciousness, but I'll be returning to my soul, because I think only a certain amount of your soul is incarnated at any point. And so I would be integrated back into the soul and be there together with all the other previous lives that I've lived.
Yeah, I would like to perhaps describe it slightly through a metaphor of, remember quite a few years back when people first started to dive into the sea, they used to have these big helmets with a pipe that used to go all the way up to the top, and big heavy weights. And people, the divers used to sink down onto the floor, and there was someone at the top pumping air all the way down the pipe. And then these divers would then have whatever task they had to do. They would wander around, and they'd have to make sure they didn't go too far, because there'd be like this pull from the mothership to keep them in check. But they would still have free will, whatever task that they had to do at the bottom of the ocean. And when we incarnate, it's a little similar to that, that we have a link to our higher consciousness called our intuition. This is what our... it is something that everybody has, and we have a physical body, and we have tasks that our soul has chosen us to do. And at some point, just as the diver is pulled up to the surface ship together with all the things that they've achieved from that dive, then we return with all the experiences we've had from our physical life. And the mothership, they'll be able to put together all of the work done by all of the other dives as part of a bigger program that that ship's trying to achieve. And in the same way, our soul will have a bigger program of what it's trying to achieve. And this particular lifetime, or the lifetime you'd have had as Simon, would have fit within that that larger program. Is that something that makes sense?
And also, in your earthly life, we all have different levels of intelligence. So when you return to your soul, does it have an intelligence level that's really quite high compared to what you might have on Earth?
What we call intelligence is really a physical attribute to be able to think things through. I've had a number of clients who have had past lives where they've been either mentally impaired or psychotic or with serious mental health problems, but they were still there to have a meaningful experience, but they couldn't at all be said to have any sort of academic ability. And other people may choose to have lives where they have a lot of academic ability, but it may be at the expense of being able to feel emotions. You know, so they may have chosen to have a life where, you know, one set of skills were available with the absence of others. So it's very hard to say, because every soul will have chosen a particular experience for a unique reason. But what is remembered are the emotional challenges that people have, and whether they were overcome or not. That's the most meaningful thing that people remember. You know, if I'm going through getting the details about a person's past life, you know, sometimes, you know, if I'm trying to get the names, say, of people, or if I'm trying to get a lot of details of the clouds, I don't necessarily always get a great information from that. Sometimes I do, but not always. But when it comes to the emotional part, or the difficulties or the challenges in the life, then I get masses of information, because that's what the soul was really there for. And all the other things that happen in between were just really, from a soul perspective, it's just a filler. And it's just something that keeps a continuity of life in place, because, you know, we can't just have emotional challenge happening again and again. There needs to be a period of time for things to settle, for us to really understand it, reflect on it, before the next one comes through. So just coming back onto your question about intelligence, that's not something that's particularly important from a soul perspective. It's how emotional challenges were responded to and possibly overcome.
In the Life Between Lives chapters in your book, you talk about a point where you choose the body for your upcoming life. Can you tell us about that, and what was the purpose of that process?
Well, of course, you know, not every aspect of life can be planned, but certainly all the major effects are planned. And this is what comes out not only with the research that I did, but that's in the book that I mentioned before, but also Michael Newton and the other pioneers have found the same thing as well. That certainly the parents and the life circumstances are picked. You know, for example, if a soul wants to have the experience of lack of love as a child, they may pick a parent who's going to be quite abusive towards them. Or a child may deliberately want to build a lot of loving childhood, and they'll pick a parent who's going to be quite loving to them. So the picking of the parents is an important part. The life circumstances are, you know, what sort of life? Is it going to be a life in the Western world, or is it going to be a life in some other sort of culture? Because all of them have got a different learning aspect with it, you know, and also the actual quality of their physical body. Sometimes people may deliberately choose to have a body that is frail, or it may pick a body that is quite physically disadvantaged, you know, deformed or has got some sort of major impairment. I think if I was to say generally about it, it tends to be the more evolved souls take on the more difficult challenges like that. The younger souls would probably find that quite a hard challenge to do. It doesn't necessarily follow at all, because souls are looking for different aspects to learn and grow. So the type of body is quite important. But what happens, there's a point where the consciousness of the new soul enters the physical body of the baby. This could be anywhere from fertilization through to the birth of the baby. And when the soul merges with the physical baby, there's obviously the DNA that's come through from the parents. And also some of that might be carefully selected beforehand with the type of body. And also the emotional characteristics that need to be worked with come down. And this is one reason why, for example, identical twins emotionally will be completely different, because they've brought down different emotional lessons to work with. So the person then will be an amalgam of the unresolved emotional issues from other lives that the soul has chosen to bring down, and the physical body and the situation that they find themselves in. And then some of the major events in life are planned, sometimes to trigger those emotions that the client wants to work with, or having situations which are very similar to ones that haven't been resolved with before. And it gives us the opportunity to work through the lessons. It's almost like being what we call on a planet Earth or life is a bit like being a schoolroom. And we have the opportunity to have exams at the end of each year, and that's called the emotional lessons that come through. And if we resolve them, we then go on to the next class and there'll be some other aspect to work with. If we don't get it right, we have to reset that year again and go through the exam later. And this is why sometimes people have reoccurring patterns of emotions. Could be anger, could be guilt, could be sadness, loneliness, the loss of loved ones, that are very difficult or difficult to work through. And if people don't work through it, it'll just keep happening again and again, different situations. It's not as a punishment. It's so that the soul can have a meaningful experience of achieving it and working through it.
Can you tell us what, in your view, karma is?
The word karma is something that is interpreted lots of different ways. And some of the religious approaches tend to use karma as a word of punishment. You know, so for example, if you do things that have hurt someone, your karma is to come back as some disadvantaged human, or to come back as an animal or an insect. And I think this is a human perspective that's been fed into the religions. I've not come across any of that at all, and none of the other pioneers that I work with have as well. There's never, ever the word punishment that comes in. And it's all around experience and growth. And souls may choose not to have that sort of experience. They may choose that they don't want to work anymore with a particular lesson, and that's fine. It's put to one side and they'll move on. Or they may choose to work in the opposite. So that, for example, if they've been the subject of abuse, they may come back as a perpetrator in the next life, just so that they can experience being the opposite. Or, you know, people may have lives where they gradually get progressively more difficult situations happening until they're able to master a particular issue. But there's never, ever any mention of punishment. And I think this is where between life work opens up and puts it in a very positive perspective, this whole area of spirituality, which unfortunately some of the world's religions, although at the core of them are all about expressing love and giving love, they've been distorted and human perspectives have been added to it. I'm afraid the word karma is something that has been misused. This is my view anyway.
Have you ever found people go into future lives? Have you ever tried to do that?
No, I don't work with future lives for the simple reason they don't exist until you have actually finished your present life. You know, I mean, for example, you can't brush your teeth until you put toothpaste on your toothbrush. You know, and likewise, when people are in the between life and they're planning, say, for the current life, they may look at two or three options of different sorts of lives they could have, but they're just talking about the experience that happened before they actually joined the physical baby. So any sort of work which covers future lives are just possibilities at the very best. But because we're constantly changing, those possibilities will always change as well. So because I work therapeutically, in other words, someone comes in with a problem and they want to resolve it, and I can do that by going to the source of the problem, helping people understand it, understand how they can do things differently, and then integrate it into the current life in a meaningful way, I don't need to do future life work. So I prefer not to do it. I also, this is my own personal view, and sometimes people are drawn to future lives out of more of a curiosity. And there are some people who, a bit like fortune tellers, are kind of there to exploit people's gullibility and perhaps present future lives more certainties of what's going to happen. So it's an area that I don't particularly like, so I choose not to work with future progression. And that doesn't mean to say it's not helpful. I know some of my colleagues do this work and do it in a very loving way. It's just that my personal view on the subject.
Now, can you tell us all about the training course that you run?
Yeah, I've been doing training now for 16 years around the world. I've been to most of the major continents of the world now, Australia, Asia, Europe, in several different countries, America, Mexico. And the training is done in a number of languages as well. And through that time, I've built up a framework. I've always been very fascinated with this whole area of accelerated learning. I used to be a corporate trainer doing training courses where people had to absorb and learn information at a very fast rate. So I came across various techniques of how to do that. And what I decided to do was to do the training in a series of modules. And between modules, students are able to practice. So the modules are as self-contained as possible. So, for example, if someone isn't trained in hypnosis, I offer a four-day hypnosis workshop to give core skills of hypnosis using suggestions. So they can use hypnosis just in a very narrow area, but still in with a wide way of helpful areas such as stress reduction, working with various forms of behavior, problem, confidence building, and things of that nature, and build up skills with clients. Because often I get students coming to me that haven't got any sort of therapeutic experience. So to do that module is quite a useful starting place. And sometimes students come in who are already qualified with hypnosis, and that's fine. There are many fine schools around. And then they would enter the first of the modules on regression therapy. And That's a 4-day module, and it covers taking people into a past life and transforming it. It's very practically focused because a lot of the reading is done offline. Everybody has 2 sessions as a client or as a therapist or as an observer on that 4-day module. And then they're able to use those skills with friends or colleagues or people that they know to be able to practice them. And it's all done under supervision. And it enables them to build and consolidate those skills of navigating a past life, of going through the death, and then a whole wide range of transformational of skills. And then the next workshop enables people to start using the energy scan that we talked about earlier and bridges, which are a way of taking people very quickly into the source of a problem, and it speeds up the duration of sessions. And starting to work with the therapeutic aspects of releasing deeper emotions. One of the things that is discussed and debated amongst different schools of psychotherapy is whether catharsis is something ought to be encouraged or not. A catharsis is the release of deep emotions. So, for example, if someone's very upset about something, they may start crying about it. That's called a catharsis. If someone wants to go through and have an experience of white knuckle rides, where they want to experience very profound emotions of fear, well, that's not called a catharsis, but it's almost like a cathartic. It's like going through and enabling emotions to come to the surface. So they're taught to be able to handle that sort of situation. And then they would, after that 4-day module, be able to practice those skills. And then the 4th module starts to take people into very deep trauma and the use of body therapy. And post-traumatic stress is something that's very difficult to resolve unless you actually are able to start working with body memories. And students at that point are taught how to do that and how to have the skills to clear it. And then the very last module, they're taught how to clear spirit attachments. This is the consciousness of people that have died, who haven't moved on, that have remained earthbound and for one reason or another have attached themselves to people. So they're taught how to clear those. And inner child regression, this is a very powerful way of using current life regression of childhood difficulties. And each module builds on the skills of the next. So it's designed in a way where people are able to do what would normally be a 3-year training course. And the regression therapy is done within a year. It would be 18 months if they need to do hypnosis as well. And then they would do 6 months to do case studies. So anywhere between 18 months and 2 years, people would be able to get a diploma in regression therapy. And it's accepted by all the associations that work with regression therapy. And students can also apply to hypnotherapy associations by putting their hypnosis and regression therapy training together to get the necessary hours to meet the requirements of the major hypnosis schools. So that's the training, and then there's various advanced modules if people wish to follow it that happen after that.
Can you tell us about your books?
Well, I've got 3 books, really. The first book I wrote started life as really the workshop notes for my training course. And then I decided that there was an absence of books that actually gave people a step-by-step approach how to use techniques. There are a lot of fine books around where a lot of pioneers had written about their case studies, but they didn't actually say how they did it. So they were more of a marketing job. And I thought, no, there needs to be change. I'm just going to give people everything, or at least sufficient for them to be able to start using the core techniques. So I wrote a book called Healing the Eternal Soul. It's used by my graduates. I mean, since then, there have been various additions and adjustments and techniques, but it's still very, very useful, a book for anybody who wants to pull out different ideas from that. And then there's Exploring the Eternal Soul, which talks about the between life experiences, which I mentioned before. And then the third book that I was the editor for, and that, there's a lot of very fine regression therapists that I've trained and asked some of them to write chapters on different techniques. And I put that together as a book. So, for example, there's a lovely lady called Christine McBride, who is one of the most amazing people with crystals. So she put together a chapter of how to use different crystals at different points of working with clients, and how to use them to clear rooms, how to help energy settle after a session, and so on. So that was a great chapter. There's a chapter by Peter Mack, who's a medical doctor who uses this sort of work in Singapore. And he wrote a chapter about how he uses past life therapy in a medical practice. There's a chapter on using of sound. There's a chapter on inner child regression. So there's like a lot of specialized areas of chapters on different topics. Oh, and there's Janet Treloar, who's an amazing trainer in the academy. She's one of the leading pioneers of working with something called spiritual emergencies. This is where more and more people these days are trying to accelerate their intuition or their intuitive abilities or their psychic abilities. And if it happens too quickly, it can be an out-of-control situation where it's almost like someone having a psychotic episode where they'll be seeing past lives popping up everywhere, be seeing energies everywhere, be tuning into people's consciousness, and it's just like an overload of spiritual experiences. And she's developed a series of techniques of how to handle that. And again, she's written about her techniques in the book there. So it's a great book for therapists. There's something not only for aggression therapists, but really for therapists, a range of different backgrounds, where they can pull a little something from that.
And they're all on Amazon, aren't they? I got mine from Amazon anyway.
I mean, all the books have been published, so all the internet companies have them. Some of them may be in some of the bookshops. Certainly, they can be ordered from the bookshops. Or they can go onto my website. It's www.regressionacademy.com. And there's a page on books there, and you can find out about those books. And there's also some books by a gentleman I mentioned before, Peter Mack, who's a surgeon in Singapore, who has a part-time regression therapy practice in his hospital. He's the head of the department. So he found there were some clients who needed to have regression. I mean, for example, he did some surgery on a client who lost a hand and had phantom pain. And even after surgery, she still had phantom pain. So he operated again and there was still phantom pain. So he used regression therapy and actually found the emotional issues associated with it. And as soon as it cleared the emotional issues, the phantom pain went. So he discovered that regression therapy is very complementary with modern day surgery. So he's a great talker. He's written some great books on it. I definitely recommend those books. Healing Deep Hurt Within by Dr. Peter Mack, M-A-C-K. And more, you can find them on the website that I mentioned.
Well, thank you very much for giving us your time and coming onto the podcast. And that was an interview with Andy Tomlinson about his book, Healing the Eternal Soul, Insights from Past Life and Spiritual Regression. And my book, which is titled Verified Near-Death Experiences, is on Amazon, and you can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. A great way to support this podcast is to join Patreon, where you get access to the extended episodes. The extended episodes are ad-free and released 2 days before the free versions, and you can sign up for a 7-day free trial. Just go to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. Thanks for listening.